KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Richmond in East Bay.
Tara Hills Pinole.
Dolores at Market Street.
Daly City.
Outer Sunset.
Castro and Church.
Edge of the Mission.
The Yorktown. Antioch.
Nopa, San Francisco.
Coming up, Mayor London Breed talks about her plan to tackle the issue of homelessness in San Francisco.
I understand that people are skeptical, and what I say is, give us a chance. Let us try it. And if it's not working or if there's a problem, then hold us accountable to do something else to fix it.
Then we hear the meaning behind some prison slang.
When they say, you working with feelings? I'm like, yes, yes I am. I'm working with feelings. I always work with feelings and you hurt them.
Feelings. Cross Currents is coming up. San Francisco currently has 9,784 people living without a home. That's according to a point-in-time count last month. It's more comprehensive than previous measurements, including not just people living on the streets and in parks, but also homeless people who are incarcerated, hospitalized, and in residential treatment facilities. The number is rising. It's 30% higher than the last point-in-time count made back in 2017. So while you may be hearing stories about efforts the city's making to curb the crisis, it's not quite working. Every year, the San Francisco Chronicle coordinates coverage of homelessness with media outlets throughout the Bay Area. As part of that, last week, Editor-in-Chief Audrey Cooper interviewed Mayor London Breed at the Jewish Community Center in the city. In partnership with the Chronicle, we've got a condensed version of that conversation to share with you now.
You've grown up here your whole life. You're one of the lucky ones among us who gets to be called a native San Franciscan. So I'm curious, how has homelessness changed in your perspective from the time you were a girl to now?
I think that, sadly, there's always been homelessness in San Francisco. And as you mentioned before, I grew up in public housing. And we had people who were probably homeless, but there were places that they could go within the public housing development to sleep at night. I mean, we've had our share of people who slept on my grandmother's couch, her couch over the years. And you didn't see it. It wasn't as out there as it is now. There was still homelessness, but now it's in all parts of the city. There were people who were struggling with drug addiction and mental illness, but it just seems as though it was in the past more concentrated to certain neighborhoods, and now it's pretty much spread out throughout the entire city of San Francisco. And so when I see that, and especially when I see people that I know, people that I grew up with, and folks that I've, you know, adults that I used to know as a kid and the struggles that they are dealing with, it really does break my heart. And it makes me want to fight harder to not just help with our homeless challenge, but to be aggressive in building more housing all over the city. And it's because that is what's going to help us in this particular issue. I'm not suggesting that it's going to solve all of our problems, but we have underbuilt housing in San Francisco for so many years, and this is part of the effects of that.
So I know people ask you all the time, what are you doing about homelessness? What do you wish everybody knew about the issue that you think goes underreported or that most people don't know about?
You know, I wish everyone knew about more of the success stories, and I think we have to do a better job of helping people to understand that last year in 2018, we've gotten over 2,000 people off the streets. You know, as you know, homelessness in San Francisco has increased, so we talk about, you know, the numbers. It's gone up by 17%, about 8,000 people. But just imagine if we weren't able to help those 2,000 people.
You have said that you want 1,000 new shelter beds by 2020. How far are you towards that goal, and how are you possibly going to get people to accept the balance in their neighborhood?
Since I've been in office, we've opened about 412 new shelter beds. We have enough on the horizon to maybe get me just a bit over 1,000 if nobody sues us. But it's going to be tough, but I'm committed to it. And I think we can get there. We just did a walkthrough in the Bayview. There's going to be a permanent shelter of 200 beds on Caltrans land that they're renting to us for like a dollar a month or a year or something like that. But hey, I might pay that myself. $12, $1.
We can all go in.
Yeah. Wish it were that easy, but we're going to build, you know, a permanent structure because I think my goal ultimately in doing this is to have places for people to go.
There are people in the city who think if you want to sleep on the street, it is your God-given right to sleep on the street.
So is it your right to, as you sleep on the street, block everyone's ability to get by or to sit and wait for a bus when there's elderly people who need to sit down? I mean, there have been situations that have frustrated me to no end.
So, if you cannot have...
Just for clarity, everyone, we don't do sweeps in San Francisco, so I just want to make sure that you know that.
Mm-hmm. So... Guys,
we don't do sweeps in San Francisco.
Either you guys need to stop interrupting or security is going to have to remove you. Guys, we heard you. Gee whiz. Do we not have security here? I do think it's important. This is one of the problems we have in the city is an inability to listen and have productive dialogue with people, even with whom we disagree.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you being here today.
Thank you. And I totally understand. They, you know, from whatever perspective, believe that it sweeps. And from my perspective, we are being very compassionate in how we are engaging with people and removing tents and trying to hold people accountable to, you know, basically, you know, take care of San Francisco. Like there's feces in a lot of places, and that's a public health issue. There's needles that we need to clean up and to allow people to just have tents set up where drug use is happening, where rapes are happening, where other issues are happening. That is not something that I believe is humane and we need to allow to do. It's not about sweeps. It's about, you know, look, if we have a place for you to go, we have a system to gather up people's belongings. And there have been, you know, sadly, unfortunate, you know, altercations because of Department of Public Works and law enforcement. They're out there doing the hard work. They're having the conversations with the homeless outreach team, with people to try to understand the issue and understand what we can do. But the flip side of that is, you know, the folks that I met when we were in a particular area where we kind of cleared the area of a large tent encampment, and basically hearing from a guy who wanted his girlfriend, because he's like, I'm in one of the shelters. I'm trying to change my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he talked about how great the person who was with the homeless outreach team, how great they were, how they came out on a regular basis, how they were treated with respect. And he was trying to convince his girlfriend to accept help. And that was a whole nother conversation. But the fact is, you know, everyone has their own opinions, their own experiences. But ultimately, you know, I have a job to do. And my goal is to help people who are willing to accept the help. And I'm not going to support allowing people to make everyone else's life miserable if they're choosing to do things that impact the quality of life in a negative way in our city. So,
You mentioned with the caveat, as long as I don't get sued. And I'm guessing that's a veiled reference to what's going on with the Embarcadero Navigation Center. I was really impressed when you went down to speak to the residents there who are very upset about the idea of having a navigation center outside of their condos.
Yeah.
I wonder sometimes if they had ever gone around the Transbay Terminal before we had the Salesforce Tower there, which was basically a tent city at night. But what do you say to the people who say, I'm compassionate, I support the city, but the navigation centers are an eyesore and I don't want to attract that to my neighborhood and outside my front door?
Well, you know, I understand that people are sometimes, you know, uncomfortable or maybe afraid of the unknown, of a change. And the fact is our navigation centers, they don't necessarily look like they're a homeless shelter. The way that we construct them, the plants, and how we try and do what we can to, you know, help them to blend in the neighborhood or make them look appealing is so that, you know, the neighborhood, you know, is supportive of the concept of what we're trying to do.
How important is that, what they look like outside? Because I think the Division
Street one is good. It's important because when you're trying to help people, I think it's important that we make sure that they're in a nice environment too, both inside and outside, that they're able to be in a place that's beautiful, like anyone else deserves to be in a place that's beautiful. So I think it goes both ways. And so I understand that people are skeptical. And what I say is, give us a chance. Let us try it. And if it's not working or if there's a problem, then hold us accountable to do something else to fix it.
So Proposition C passed last year, which raises $300 million a year by taxing business for homelessness services. You came out against it. It passed, and now it seems, at least one court ruling says it will maybe be withheld. Who knows what it's like. Do you think the city is prepared to wisely spend that much money? It would basically double the amount of spending we have so far.
I think that there's a lot of housing that I can build that's in the pipeline, so I can build it sooner rather than later. There are a number of shelter beds that we want to add to our city in certain areas, and so I definitely have ways to spend the money wisely, not creating new things, but looking at ways to speed up other projects. Shelter beds, 100% permanently supportive housing, and also rent subsidies and to try and keep people housed who are facing eviction, because that's another challenge that we face in our city, people who are losing their housing and end up homeless. And so if we can do everything to invest into keeping people housed in the first place, whether it's right to civil counsel or it's rent subsidies that might get someone through a couple of months until they get another job or what have you, I think that is a very cost-effective way of helping in those particular situations.
You just released the point in time count, which was one night volunteers go out, they break out in grids and they try to count as many homeless people or people that you assume are homeless as possible. And it happens every 2 years. One of the things that was in this report, which is fascinating, I think, if anyone wants to read it, is that in 2 years ago, we had about 300 encounters that cops did with homeless people basically sleeping overnight at SFO at the airport. Last year, it was 1,200. Mm-hmm. It's just a huge amount of people who know, just like anyone who's ever been stuck in an airport overnight, that it's a place you can sleep. How can we prevent our airport from becoming a makeshift shelter?
So there are some conversations going on with San Mateo County and with our airport and with BART to talk about a strategy around addressing that. I've been in touch with the director of the airport because it has been a problem. And unfortunately, you know, the problem has, you know, as you said, gotten worse over time. But we're coming up with a strategy around that last stop to the airport, and it's not fully baked, but it's something that's probably going to be out fairly soon to address the issue.
One of the statistics that is often pointed to that drives me crazy about this issue is the one that says up to 80% of our homeless population became homeless in San Francisco.
I thought it was 70.
Yeah, well, okay, you're being more generous than I am, or less generous than I am. If you accept that as true, it means 20 to 30% of almost 10,000 people came here to be homeless.
Yeah.
So what can we do about the people who come here for the reason I came here and probably a lot of the people in the audience did, because it's a temperate city, because it's a progressive city, because it's the most beautiful city in the world.
It is.
That is unbiased. what can we do about the people who are adding to this problem and coming from elsewhere?
Yeah, and I think that's a real challenge for us. And the difficulty we have is you know, we're not the kind of city that says, okay, you can come in because you can afford to pay your rent, and you can't because you're going to come and be a drain on our services. I mean, that's just not something we're going to say or we're going to do. But I think the important part is everyone has to do their part. It can't just be San Francisco, especially with 24% of the homeless population in the entire country in California. Like, major cities feel the impacts more than anyone else. But when you, you know, have a city that is building huge campuses and job opportunities, like, they also have to be a part of the housing solution. Like, so there has to be some accountability from everyone. And I think that I think when other cities have housing, when they have homeless shelters, when they have supportive services, you know, we all just need to share in on the responsibility to address this issue. That's not going to keep people from coming to San Francisco. People come here for so many different reasons. But I'm hopeful that it will help share the challenges that we face with addressing this issue.
That's San Francisco Mayor London Breed speaking with Audrey Cooper at the Jewish Community Center in San Francisco. It's part of the San Francisco Chronicle Talks Homelessness with support from Cisco. You can hear the full panel discussion at our website, kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Next up, we've got a story from Uncuffed, our series recorded and edited by incarcerated men at Solano State Prison in Vacaville.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
About 1 in 6 male prisoners in the country report being abused as children. Both Joey Pagawan and Spoon Jackson share that experience. In this conversation, Joey talks with Spoon about letting go and what he calls working with feelings.
I know how it feels to be whipped with a water hose, extension cord, and tree branch. I know how it feels to be threatened by my dad to hit me over the head with a hammer when I said I wished I was dead. I know how it feels at 5 years old to be slapped by my kindergarten teacher I was in love with. Like me, Joey uncovered his physical abuse, and we both found solace in the arts. We both thought beatings were the norm.
You know, when I was younger, there was a lot of physical abuse and emotional abuse, and there was even sexual abuse. And growing up in the 80s and 90s, you know, most kids got smacked around. So it's like, okay, not a big deal. You know, it's like, what happened? Oh, my pops hit me. It was accepted, but that really hurt me. I mean, there's a lot of shame that came from being sexually abused, because it's emasculating, you know, especially when you're a young kid growing into your teenage years, you know, you don't really know how to connect it. So what I did was I pushed it all down. I pushed it all down, and it just turned into just a fire of hate within me. And that's what I sent out into the universe. I used to put on a mask.
What that mask consists of? You're talking about on the streets or in prison?
On the streets. It started on the streets. You know, I was a different person around my friends. A lot of anger, and I didn't know how to cope with that. Either I only had two modes. You know, either I was aggressive or passive aggressive. You know, there was no in between. And I mean, I don't even know how the hell I held on to any of my friends, because I was just a really nasty person. I felt like I didn't deserve it. I didn't deserve any accolades. I didn't deserve feeling good about myself.
Why? Because you've done something so tragic that you could never recover, that you should be sent down to Hades or something? That's what you said?
Yeah. I've done a lot of horrible things in my life, and I'm not sure if I'll ever be able to fully make up for
them. You know, they're saying nothing human is alien to anybody. So you learned how to, what, balance the darkness and light through your art? That what you're saying?
Yeah, through my art, through my running, coping. I'm able to open up to people. I talk to people now. Before, I used to hold everything in until I just exploded with whatever rage I had. I lived like that until I came to prison. And then when I got to prison, it got even worse. You know, complaining about everything, just being really bad to people, disrespectful, just not giving a damn about anything but myself. And, you know, I learned to suppress it. I suppressed a lot of it. And eventually when, like, Shakespeare showed up here, and the program started, I looked and just saw all these happy people. And for the first time since I've been in prison, I felt like, hey, I'm not in prison anymore. Because, you know, we didn't talk about prison when we were in there. We talked about the stories that kind of told everybody's story, you know, because, you know, we all go through struggles. And I found out that, you know, the guy sitting next to me, he went through a lot of the same things I did, and so did the other guy, so did the other guy. I mean, the details change, but the overarching story didn't. And it was just really important that, you know, the love that connected us was stronger than, you know, the opinions that separated us. We have a saying here, a lot of guys like saying, so you're working with feelings now? And before, that used to make me so mad, right? It's like, you know, what the hell did you just say to me? Now it's like when they say, you working with feelings? I'm like, yes, yes, I am. I'm working with feelings. I always work with feelings, and you hurt them. I'm a lot better at expressing myself. When somebody does something that bothers me, instead of getting sarcastic or slyly insulting them, you know, I tell them, hey, man, you did that, and that really hurt me, or that irritated me. I participated in groups, enormously increased my emotional vocabulary.
What did that mean?
Emotional vocabulary, that's like being able to put a word to your feelings. You know, before it's like, I only had a few words. Joey happy, Joey angry, Joey sad. It's your emotional intelligence. It's being able to speak about your emotions. And I really believe the biggest thing for me was be able to describe the way I feel.
To color emotion.
Exactly. And being able to share in a group, the way we're able to help each other. When you see somebody like really get that role, or see a guy that's usually really introverted open up and share and create.
And do you use your art, say writing, to supplement that aggression or hurt into something that you don't even have to discuss with anybody? You just put it into your art and put it on stage, or put it on a piece of paper, and
yeah.
Does that work for you?
Writing is very cathartic to me. I always believe wholeheartedly that you aren't something unless other people call you it, right? I always thought it was a conceit of people when they ask them, what are you? What do you do? And, you know, guys like, I'm a writer, I'm a journalist. And it's all like, you know, it's one of those self-imposed titles, right? You know, you just give it to yourself and you try to be that. And I always believe that you aren't something unless other people called you it. So it's
when you still believe that?
No. I believe you can be whoever the hell you want to be.
That was Joey Pagawan speaking with Spoon Jackson. Spoon is a producer in KALW's radio class at Solano State Prison. It's supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, kalw.org/uncuffed. And while you're there, make sure you're subscribed to the Cross Currents newsletter and get all our stories and interviews in your inbox every week. This music is by Michaela McVeigh from Oakland. She's performing at Hotel Utah in San Francisco tomorrow night.
I'm back in love like a steam train, hiding danger into me. Sure enough, you ain't the one to blame, baby. You just shake something loose.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Audrey Dilling, Manola Morales, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega Welch, Jessica Plachik, Andrew Stelzer, Corey Suzuki, Jocelyn Tabankai, and Eli Wortschafter. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.